You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Adam Mansbach's third novel, provocatively titled The End of the Jews, chronicles three generations of a Jewish literary family from the Depression-era Bronx to contemporary suburbia, and along the way explores questions of race, identity, and creativity. It's published by Spiegel and Grau, and I'm very pleased that it brings Adam Mansbach back to the show today. Pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you.
The novel follows the lives of three characters in alternating chapters. A famed novelist, Tristan Brodsky, his grandson, Tristan Friedman, and a Czech Jewish girl named Nina Ritchek. Was any of these inspired by real-life writers and artists?
Not directly. I would say that my grandfather was the closest thing to the elder Tristan. He was not a novelist. He was a judge, but he had a similar kind of complexity. He was the kind of guy that his descendants sort of gathered to study as if he were a difficult novel and we were a study group on it, you know. Similar relationship between life and work, a very tortured one, similarly complicated marriage. And I grew up around him and my grandmother, who was a poet, and their wide circle of friends, and I was always fascinated by them. So in some ways, I tried to address that generation through that character.
Although Tristan Brodsky here refused to be like your grandfather, he, much to his parents' great disappointment, became a writer. Of the generation of Bernard Malamud and Saul Bellow, grew up in the Bronx, and his first novel, The Angel of the Shtetl, catapults him into the literary aristocracy. So is he using the stories of his immigrant neighborhood in order to get out of it?
In some ways he is. He's certainly, as you say, very much a sort of when in Rome, do as the Egyptians kind of guy. So he gets off the track that he's expected to follow, that of the doctor, the lawyer, the guy who's going to make enough money to lift his family out of the shtetl as soon as he can.
He moves away the day from the Bronx the day he signs his book contract.
Yes, he does. But at the same time, he's very unwilling, even though he is writing these stories about the Bronx, to be labeled as a Jewish writer. He's very resistant to that kind of pigeonholing. And really, throughout his life, he insists on a kind of complexity and ambiguity that puts him at odds with the world. So he becomes famous as this Jewish writer. And by the 50s, he'll write a book which will make him despised by the Jewish community because it's the story of a Jewish-owned slave ship making Middle Passage to America. So in the immediate aftermath of the Holocaust, he writes this book that's seemingly so out of step with what the morality of the times demands. And his response to this is, how can I not write this book? How can we understand evil in the world if we don't first address it in ourselves?
The younger Tristan, who goes by the name of Tris, or his graffiti tag, Risk, is a hip-hop DJ who performs at bar mitzvahs and is a local suburban Connecticut synagogue. Weren't you rather involved in the hip-hop culture in your adolescence?
Yeah, I was, and I continue to be, and I will.
You have a record out.
I do. In fairness, I will cop to having DJed a couple of suburban bar mitzvahs, which was not what I intended when I bought the equipment, not what my character intended either. Both of us, I think, thought we'd be playing far cooler parties, but when you're able to undercut the bar mitzvah DJing competition by 90%, those are the gigs you end up with.
So you didn't make your hip-hop recording then. You made it more recently.
Well, I was making recordings back then, but I don't think they ever saw the light of day.
What is the new one called?
I put one out in 2005 called Stand for Nothing, Fall for Anything, which was sort of a collaboration with a bunch of jazz musicians.
And music is really important to all of these characters. They're kind of intertwined with it one way or another. Tristan discovers jazz as a teenager, becomes friends with a drummer, Albert Van Horn, who was also a character in your first novel, Shackling Water.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think hip-hop speaks to your generation in the same way that jazz did to your grandparents?
I think in some ways it does. In other ways, I think that the world is so different that a comparison is hard to draw. Although certainly hip-hop and jazz are both fueled by the same kind of improvisation and a lot of the same spirit. One thing I try to look at in the book really is the ways in which Jewish culture and black culture have intersected in the 20th century among these individuals. And in some ways, to me, one of the most fascinating stories of this past century is the way in which the mainstreaming of a Jewish identity relied so heavily at times on the immutable otherness of blackness. So we find characters inspired by jazz, inspired by hip-hop, but I want that to be a very kind of fraught relationship, one that we look at critically and see the complexities of.
So where does Nina fit into this? She's a young Czech woman, also entranced the first time that she hears jazz.
Yeah, Nina uses jazz more literally as a method of escape even than the others, because she is trapped behind the Iron Curtain and is able to get out of communist-era Czechoslovakia with an American jazz band. She kind of latches on as a traveling photographer.
Not long before Prague Spring.
Right, right. She escapes, you know, months before an escape wouldn't even have been necessary. But she's completely foreign both to the world of jazz and actually the world of Judaism also, because she hasn't been allowed to even really know that she is Jewish. So in the course of things, as she's traveling with this band, they attempt to kind of bring her into the life of this band, which is really a family traveling on a bus throughout America, largely by telling her that she's so soulful that she must have some black blood in her. She must have a Creole great-grandfather or something. She's sort of ambiguous looking enough that she could pass. So sort of against her better judgment, Nina eventually takes this on to the point where she will apply for a college scholarship and check a box marked for black artists.
It's interesting. The women who are artists in this novel always seem to be married to men that they wind up taking a back seat to. Do you see that as the plight of talented women in general?
I think certainly throughout history, many talented women have taken that back seat. I hope that my characters are kicking and screaming from the back seat and maybe taking off, you know, a strand of pearls and wrapping it around the neck of the person in the front seat. Tristan, the elder's wife, Amalia, is a poet who is several notches above him on the class rank, the financial rank, and they have a marriage that's very complicated and, yeah, is characterized by her.
She sacrifices her career.
She does, and in some ways only is able to redeem it in the final sort of chapters.
Do you think that assimilation is different for more recent immigrants like Nina as compared to the ones who came over in the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century from Eastern Europe?
I think certainly it is, in the sense that identity today is in some ways something that we exercise almost as an option and see the different vectors available to us. And, you know, I think it's, well, it depends on what community you're immigrating into. I think certainly there are still enclaves, you know, and you come over and you move to the neighborhood where all of your people are. So I think it's really a question of when and where and how you enter. But for Nina, coming in from Europe and having the ability to mesh with this jazz band and find her own legs fairly easily, identity is really something that is optional for her, that she's able to pick up and wield almost as a weapon when and how she chooses, and which is also wielded against her and against all these other characters in various ways throughout the book. Identity is mutable for all of them. It's something that's always in flux, whether it's religious or sexual or political, and they're often very surprised at how they use it and how it's used against them.
My guest is Adam Mansbach, whose third novel is called The End of the Jews. It's published by Spiegel and Grau. And you have a wonderful scene in which Triss, the younger Tristan, takes his grandfather out to tag freight trains, and then when he uses the experience to in the next book, his grandfather, Triss feels betrayed. Is this something that every writer must deal with, how to draw upon their own experience to create characters and plots without having their friends and family feel that they've betrayed a confidence?
I think that is something that in various ways and to various degrees we all deal with. I think that for every writer, there are certain phone calls that you perpetually hope are not going to come. And you sort of wipe your brow with relief when the book comes out and those phone calls don't come, or you work through it if you
stole
if
my
do.
Story.
Yeah, that's me with another name and, you know.
Well, to make matters worse, Tristan's book is hailed as daring. And when Triss tries to write about his own experience, it's dismissed as inauthentic.
Right. Yeah, there's really not enough room in this family for these two very ambitious competing novelists, the grandfather and the grandson.
What about authenticity in another level? When whites record hip-hop, mm-hmm. they're almost always called inauthentic.
Yeah, I think authenticity is in some ways the dominant paradigm that artists today have to deal with and work around, whether it's novelists who may or may not really be memoirists in disguise and vice versa. Some of that is more litigious than, you know, the other way around. Or hip-hop artists. Yeah, this notion of authenticity is very important. And I think that You know, my experience dealing with the hip hop world for the last 20 years, from a time when hip hop was very much not in the cultural mainstream, was always that the personal and the political very quickly got separated. So the notion that white people are exploiters and co-opters of black culture, I think was and is very true. But at the same time, if your motivations and your interests seem sincere and you seem diligent and respectful, you would be respected.
But the part of what makes writing fiction interesting is getting into other people's minds. And we've had, throughout history, we've had women writing from male point of views, men writing from the female point of view, people writing from the point of view of other races, mm-hmm. whatever,
yeah.
of perfectly law-abiding citizens writing from the mind of a serial killer.
Right.
And then only once in a while, usually when it's a touchy subject, do we hear inauthenticity.
Yeah, that's interesting. And certainly the politics of race and class and gender play into that. My take on it has always been that the stakes actually get higher for me as a male writer writing a female character, for me as a white writer, a Jewish writer writing a person of color. I think that any time you are writing a character whose position on that socioeconomic class privilege scale is lower than you, you have even a greater impetus to get it right and to fully inhabit the character. I would say, though, that, you know, the thing to me that is so wonderful about writing fiction is that despite the tremendous ego and isolation that it requires, it's ultimately a very humanitarian endeavor because you are forcing yourself to try to understand people.
Well, in this case, all of your main characters are Jewish, but none of them are observant.
That's true.
Now, is that linked to the title, The End of the Jews?
In some ways. You know, it's funny. I get so many different reactions to the title, from knowing smiles to furrowed brows. And the title most directly came to me when I attended a family bar mitzvah with my grandfather. And it was a real sort of garish affair with smoke machines and hired dancers. And he just sort of turned to me and said, "Boy, this is the end of the Jews." And there's a smile on his face. And this is a guy who was not religious himself. And no one in my family is, just like no one in my book is. For me, the end of the Jews really refers to the end of sort of pat, easily identifiable forms of community that we can just slide into uncritically. I think that when we talk about community, it's very important to talk about the margins, because for everyone who's nestled comfortably in the bosom of community, there is someone else who's on the outskirts who feels ambiguous, alienated, unwilling, or unable to come further in. And I think those margins are where art really happens, because of the pain and also the perspective that that distance from the center affords. And in terms of a Jewish community, those margins tend to be very well populated, because there are so many ways to feel ambiguous, alienated, and so forth as a Jew, because you can feel ethnically Jewish but not religious. You can identify historically but not, you know, with some of the politics.
And then there are all the national issues. For example, when a Pole comes to the United States, we don't say a Catholic. We say somebody who's Polish or Polish-American. We don't talk about a French person as being Catholic.
Yeah.
We say a French-American. But,
yeah.
But Jews, no matter where they come from, whether it's Russia, Germany, Poland, whatever, they're Jews.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I read recently that even in the Soviet Union, on your passport, in a country that, you know, did not abide religion at all, it was actually illegal, it still said Jewish on your passport. So it's clearly was something more than just a religion.
Why do you think so many Jewish kids have identified with black culture, as Nina and Tris do here?
I think that the reason primarily, beyond voyeurism, beyond a sense of wanting to experience some kind of more authentic life or any of these more complex reasons, is because on a very profound level, I think because of the experiences of African Americans in this country, there's an honesty and a truth to a lot of that art that speaks across national boundaries, racial boundaries. There's a beauty and a poetry to jazz and to the work of a writer like James Baldwin and to so much of this art that is really universal.
You don't think that it also comes out of a sense of shared discrimination?
I think that's true also.
Although that's changed.
Yeah, I think that particularly the sort of black-Jewish connection is reliant on so a lot of the reasons for sort of Jewish marginality and well-populated margins that I was just talking about apply equally well to the sort of African-American or the African diaspora, because just as Jews were dislocated, were banished, were immigrants, Africans for the same – well, for different reasons, but related ones, slavery and displacement and all of that, have a similar similarly fraught identity that's ambiguous and can lead to a lot of marginality, which in turn can lead to a lot of great art and creativity.
When you teach writing, do you use hip-hop as a way to connect to the students?
I certainly have. With younger students in particular, I would sometimes begin my semester with an exercise that involved playing them a Lauryn Hill song and reading them a poem by Keats. And the point of the exercise was that these two things are doing the exact same kind of work. They're both representing the self in the same kind of way. And it's important to me that kids understand that the critical skills they have, that they've developed organically in debating whether Nas or Jay-Z is a better rapper, discussing the various lyrical abilities of these folks that they're invested in, those same critical skills can be applied to literature, can be applied to life. So I think, you know, I'm a big believer in terms of my pedagogy of meeting students where they are. So if Lil Wayne is what they want to talk about, cool, we can talk about Lil Wayne. We can find a way to make that instructive.
Adam Mansbach's latest novel is The End of the Jews. It's published by Spiegel and Grau. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.